Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's 2019 second quarter results conference call and webcast. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique et la webdiffusion des résultats du deuxième trimestre de l'exercice 2019 d'Innergex Énergies Renouvelables. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session for analysts and institutional investors. Instruction will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulty hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Communication Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. A presentation supporting today's discussion is available as we speak on the homepage of our website at www.innergex.com. This call may contain forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable securities laws. Although the corporation believes that the expectations and assumptions on which forward-looking statements are based are reasonable under the current circumstances, listeners are cautioned not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements, as no assurance can be given that it will prove to be correct. Forward-looking information contained herein is made as of the date of this call. The corporation does not undertake any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information, whether as a result of events or circumstances occurring after the date hereof, unless so required by law. During this call, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of this presentation for more information. Our speakers today will be Mr. Jean-François Neault, Chief Financial Officer, who will present Q2 results, and Mr. Michel Letellier, President and Chief Executive Officer, who will review our Q2 operational highlights and our Q3 priorities. I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Neault.
Thank you, Karine. Hello, everyone. Again, this quarter, we pursued our growth and posted increased results. Before going further, I'd like to stress that all 2018 amounts mentioned were restated to be comparable with 2019, given that we are reporting on continued operations basis, which excludes HSR results. In the second quarter, our production proportionate, which includes our share of joint ventures and associate, grew by 12%. Our revenues proportionate and adjusted EBITDA proportionate also posted strong growth at 18% and 15% respectively. For the six-month period, production proportionate, revenues proportionate, and adjusted EBITDA proportionate increased by 26%, 24%, and 21% respectively. On slide eight, production improved mainly due to the increase of 255 GWh in the wind segment caused by the acquisition of the remaining interest in the five Cartier wind farms. The hydro segment recorded lower production, mainly due to the below-average water flows in BC, which couldn't be entirely compensated by the good results in Quebec. Continuing to slide nine, quarterly revenues reached 144.7 million dollars, due mainly to the Cartier acquisition and higher revenues from the wind facilities in France. Now, if we look at the adjusted EBITDA, we can see an increase of 15% over last year at 105.2 million dollars, not only due to the Cartier acquisition, but also to a better performance by the Mesgi'g Hugeson wind facility and a slight improvement in France. When adding our share of the joint ventures and associates on slide 11, our adjusted EBITDA proportionate reached 120.8 million dollars, a 15.8 million increase over the same quarter last year. Contribution of the investment in Energia Lima and better performance at our wind facilities in Texas more than offset lower production at the Doki and Vigée de Noville facilities. On next page, changes in the financial position items stems mainly from the sale of HS Orca and the additional construction activities at Ford and Phoebe. As shown on the next slide, our free cash flow, which include HS Orca since we are reporting on a trailing 12-month basis, increased by almost $24 million to $115.7 million, mainly due to the higher adjusted EBITDA, which was mostly derived from the acquisition of Cartier. Our payout ratio improved at 79% compared to 88% a year ago. On slide 14, we concluded the sale of HS Orca during the quarter. Proceeds, as previously mentioned, were used to repay the one-year credit facility contracted at the time of the acquisition of the Cartier wind farms and to deleverage corporate facilities. You can also see that we have concluded financing activities for the Ford City and Phoebe projects. The Ford City construction loan was US$290.9 million, which is backed by a $275 million US tax equity commitment and a $23.3 million US 7-year term loan facility with a 10-year amortization period to be provided upon the commercial operation date. Supplemental financing will be sought now that the project was granted additional turbines. As for the Phoebe solar project, the initial tax equity funding was approximately $37.1 million provided by Wells Fargo Central Pacific Holding and was achieved on June 4th. On that note, I will give the floor to Michel for the operational review of the past quarter.
Well, thank you, Jean-François, and good morning, everybody. I'm especially, you know, I'm always proud of my team, but I'm especially proud of the construction team that have been quite busy on the two U.S. Projects. Phoebe is advancing as we have explained and Jean-François is mentioning. So the initial tax equity funding has been done. We have about five blocks out of seven now producing electricity. And we're still confident that we'll be in final operation by the end of September, all that with within budget. So pretty impressive. And just to remind you that so far, Phoebe will be the largest solar plant in Texas. So that's kind of interesting for a small Canadian company being that exposed to U.S. In the solar. Pretty proud of that aspect. Ford City has had a good run in the last quarter. As you saw, we have had the permitting extended to include nine new turbines. So we're back to over 350 megawatt project. So quite happy on that turnout and also on the execution of the team that has redefine the project to take into consideration the FAA limitation on the area. So quite satisfied on how both the construction team and our contractor, Blattner, was able to be nimble and flexible, all that to basically rearrange the plan and still have the plan being in operation by the end of September as well. We had forecasted that COD to be taking place in Q4, but if we're lucky, now all the turbines are erected and the substation has been energized, and GE is commissioning anywhere between three and five turbines per day. So all looking good. If weather permits, we should be finalized by the end of September as well. So quite impressed with all that execution. Just a little reminder also on Fort City. Fort City has the PTC, as you remember. The PTC is about $24 per megawatt hour. In this case, that will represent more than $30 million per year. So just a slight reminder, when we make the enterprise value ratio over EBITDA, in this case, our portion of the EBITDA, if we don't take into consideration the PTC, will be around $14 million. And if you're adding more than $30 million as a PTC, you have the equivalent of about $45 to $46 million worth of equivalent of an EBITDA. So if you take just over $400 million enterprise value of that Fort City divided by this adjusted EBITDA to take into consideration the PTC contribution, then you're close to about nine times that multiple. So just a reminder that PTC component in those projects is huge, and one has to take that into consideration when we're looking at the EV / EBITDA ratio. In terms of other development now, I'm quite happy also on the signature of Inavik project. That's not a big project in terms of size, but given this remote location and the avoided cost to produce electricity in those remote area, this project will be quite interesting in terms of profitability, but it's also a great social project. We're partnered with the Inuit, and we're offsetting the diesel on this area by more than 90%. So quite interesting in terms of the 3P, as you know, people, the planet, and profit. This is a very very good example of the type of project we love to do. The project will be over $130 million worth, roughly, and it should have an EBITDA close to about $10 million. The type of arrangement we have with Hydro-Québec is a capacity payment and availability payment, so we're not at risk in any way of the total consumption on the village. Hydro-Québec is still the one that distributes the energy, and they're giving us an annual payment paid monthly on capacity based. So this is very interesting, and it's also for 40 years. As Jean-François mentioned, we also divest of HSRCA, so we wish all the good to the new and existing owner. Sad to leave Iceland in a way. It's a great place, and it was interesting business, but I think that we have a better expertise in other technology, and we feel a little bit more comfortable with the new market that we're developing. So we're refocusing and deploy this money into Canada and our main project. So quite happy on the execution as well on that side. In terms of new development as well, if we stay in the U.S., Hillcrest is our next focus. We just enter into an exclusivity agreement for a few weeks, almost a month, to finalize the discussion on a PPA with a big customer in the U.S. So getting very, very close to have an interesting PPA that would enable us to put all the tax equity and start construction on Hillcrest. Still in the U.S., but a little bit further in Hawaii. The smallest of the two projects we won, the 15-megawatt PIU, is been challenged by local resident that find the project to be too close to their home. We're going to the evaluation with the authority over there, but we don't think it's going to create a big issue. It's a typical little bit of a pushback because the land that we're using is a private land, it's a private ranch, and unfortunately people has become to be accustomed to take advantage of that free with free access land, but it's a private land. So we think that things are going to be settled in the next few months, but still of a concern for the development team. Also in Hawaii, they made an announcement that a new call, a new RFP, will be released for renewable energy and storage. So we're getting prepared also to answer that call. We've been successful last time, so our hopes are high to take also some win in that particular call. Now, if we go to France, we're going to stay in the U.S. You've seen that we have been very busy in trying to develop a solar project in the future. And one of the strategy was to secure about 150 megawatt of solar panel to help us be pre-qualified fully for the 100% ITC program. We are now in a position to, with the land acquisition, we still are working obviously towards the 750, but we are advancing very well. I think we can be comfortable to say that we have between 300 and 400 megawatt already secured, and it's just the beginning. So I'm very confident that we'll have some very good site to accommodate this 750 megawatt of new project in the U.S. The idea is to create value by developing our greenfield project. We've got the experience in building now in the U.S. and developing a project. We have entered the market with some acquisition with Phoebe as an example, and to some degree with Hillcrest, it was a little bit less advanced. But the idea was to get to know how it works. And now that we think we have a much better handle on the how does this this market works and how tax equity works, now it's time to create our own project and create greenfield development profit that would enable us to somehow have a bigger portfolio and give us some opportunity to welcome some financial investor with us in order to, I would say, crystallize some of the greenfield development that we are now creating. If we go to France, France is as we know, as you know, a market that takes a lot of time to develop projects. We're advancing project. We're encouraged on the development that we're doing there. But we said that the project will be ready for perhaps start construction in 2021, 2022. So as we are advancing our project, we're hoping that we will have some very good project to be put into a few RFPs in the next 4 or 5 years. So working on building that portfolio of, again, greenfield project. We're definitely less active in the M&A in France. We're concentrating our effort in creating our own project in France. Chile is a market that is very active also in terms of M&A. We're looking at a few small acquisition together with our partner in Chile, which is Energy AIMA. We're also very encouraged on the advancement that we are seeing in terms of financing Frontera. We have also been active in refinancing Duqueco. We have talked and worked with Fitch in order to see if Duqueco could be a investment grade project given the, I would say, a reasonable leverage percentage in the project. And we have had the shadow rating being confirmed as an investment grade product. So that is helping us thinking about and developing strategy to finance further project in Chile. So all in all, quite happy on that aspect, and firming out some assumption for a future decision in Frontera. So that would conclude my presentation, and I would be very happy together with Jean-François to answer to your question. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your question will be pulled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you're using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. Your first question comes from Sean Stewart from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Few questions. Michel, you referenced the 150 megawatts of solar panels you've safe harbored and potential leading to 750 megawatts, and you talked about hoping to have 300 to 400 megawatts secured beyond Hillcrest and Hawaii. Any context you can give us on where you're looking at those developments, economics in comparison to Hillcrest and the Hawaii projects, any details you can provide there?
Well, it's very early, but we, as you know, we're active in Texas, so this is definitely a place where we think we're going to have a lot of success. And we're looking into PJM. Pennsylvania is a place. Ohio also. We have some I would say some leads in Ohio given the Hillcrest project over there. So the idea is to be in liquid market where we can create value. We can sign long-term contract with customer or put some power edge together. And of course, it's difficult to be. Firm on return and stuff like that, but the idea is to go up the value chain and having our own project being developed by our own team is increasing the profitability or the potentially increasing the profitability. We've been active in the M&A to understand the project, but of course, when you're doing M&A, if you're doing well, you're doing an okay return, but obviously, you're always paying a premium to the initial developer. So we are hoping to create value with our own team. And an example for that is Fort City. As you could see the numbers of Fort City, they're pretty healthy. That was a Altera greenfield project that was brought to the development stage of construction. So the idea is create value, and we think that even if solar is a little bit less, create a little bit less value in terms of internal rate of return, the resale potential value of those projects, the cap rate that investors are looking in solar are less than wind. So even if your project is a little bit less profitable in terms of internal rate of return or cash on cash, the idea is that you're creating a lot of value because investor, especially a financial investor, likes solar, and there's a better discount rate applied to the project when they're in operation. So the idea is to create value and be able to recycle some of the capital that we're putting into these projects.
Understood. And just to follow up on Ohio specifically with respect to Hillcrest or prospective solar projects there, the state seems to have lowered its RPS hurdles. And I gather because you're contracting with commercial partners or that's the intent, that's not an issue for your growth aspirations in that state.
No, and funny enough, Hillcrest was was already known to the authorities and had made the step to interconnect and all that stuff. So actually, we have been grandfathered on the old system over there. So we have been protected on the REC pricing. So that was a good news. Of course, this Ohio has been quite active with the new bill that was put forward to protect and bail out the nuclear plant over there. But through the hearings, I think there were six or seven projects that were already listed and be part of the total system that were grandfathered, and the Hillcrest was part of that group.
Okay, thank you very much for that. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of David Quezada from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Morning, guys.
Good morning.
My first question here, just on Phoebe and Ford City, as you get close to COD here, are you committed at this point to keeping 100% of those projects, or would you still consider selling down a stake at COD?
we're always considering. We don't need necessarily the cash today. So I think that we're considering. There's some good opportunity there, but we might want to grow the portfolio a little bit bigger before thinking any decision on that aspect. I would say that Ford City is generating some very good cash on cash also. So we're not in a hurry to sell Ford City. Solar projects are a little bit more restrained in terms of cash on cash. So we might have a little bit more appetite to divest of solar asset a little bit quicker than a typical Ford City that generate good cash on cash.
Okay, that's good color. Thank you. And then maybe just a question on the Texas market in general. Obviously, that's an increasing part of your business, and we've seen higher prices there, it seems, recently. Are you able to realize those prices much on the portion of your wind assets that are not contracted, or are prices typically lower when the wind is blowing strong?
Well, that's a little bit of the issue, but in the flat top is a little bit better, and Shannon has improved quite a bit. So we're not in the Pendahl where it's killing yourself when it's blowing. So it's a little bit less of an issue for us. But obviously, when it's everything is blowing, it's a little bit more difficult to obtain the full premium. But it's improving in Shannon. It's definitely improving. And like I said in the previous call, the authority over there are working hard to basically invest in the transmission system and transportation system to ease any congestion. So they have work in Shannon, and now it seems to improve. On Ford City, we're expecting to have a little bit more because now the agreement that we have is based on the PPA that we have is based on about 300 megawatt. So we have 50 more megawatt either to sell or to play with the merchant market. So Ford City might see a little bit more upside on that aspect. And it's from the study that we have been given, Ford City should have a better access to the grid and should be it should benefit to a lower discount on the note. So looking good for Ford City on that aspect.
That's good to know. Thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes on the line of Mark Jarvi from CIBC. Please go ahead.
Sorry. Good morning, everyone. Maybe just going down to Chile, El Canelo, there's some commentary in the MD&A about coming to a decision. Do you guys see it as more likely to proceed, or is there some barriers to move forward on that project right now?
Well, the Canelo is a smaller project, and when we enter, we wanted to change some design. It's the profitability of Canelo might be marginal, so we still are looking at it, but we're getting a lot more excited about a project called San Carlos, just up front of Frontera. That's another 100 megawatt, and we have some possibility to increase the capacity to about 150 megawatt, with some capacity to play with the upstream pound and to get to have anywhere between 4 and 5 hours of storage. So that's why we're perhaps slowing down a little bit on Canelo and refocusing on San Carlos, which is a bigger project and probably a better profitability in San Carlos.
Okay.
So we'll give you more color in the next few quarter on San Carlos.
Okay, sounds good. And then going back to Texas, obviously recent prices are very strong, but looking at some of the documentation earlier a few months ago on resource adequacy, there's talk about a lot more supply coming in the market and some question marks about what that is doing to the forward curve. When you think about adding more capacity in Texas, how concerned would you be about being overexposed to that market in case pricing does soften? Or how important is diversification into other regions of the U.S. right now in your thinking?
Well, you're saying all the right thing. We'll be concerned. You always hear me talking about diversification, so. Of course, that's why we're saying we think we can create value in greenfield solar. But at one point in time, divesting of a portion of this project will probably be one of our priority. Not that we don't like the market, and I think that eventually the coal and any nuclear will have a very difficult time to maintain their profitability. So I guess that a portfolio of wind, solar, and potentially some storage in Texas would be interesting. Of course, natural gas is always cheap in Texas, and hence I think that the market will not go crazy high. It could obviously have some peaks. But I'm reasonably comfortable with the long-term view that pricing should stabilize anywhere between, you know, depending on, I would say on an average year, anywhere between 30 and 35 in 10 years. So, as you know, most of our output are sold under either edge or contract for 10 to 12 years. So my concern is more likely at the end of those PPA, what would be the price in Texas? You know, natural gas price has been quite low lately, and the price of electricity is fairly good. So my view is that in 10 years from now, in terms of pricing, we're viewing the price anywhere between $30 and $40 per megawatt hour, and on that basis, projects are pretty healthy financially. So that's our view.
Okay. And then just maybe on last question, beyond Phoebe and financing, thoughts around incremental tax equity in that project. And then if you did think about selling down, does that influence or change at all the structure for financing on for that project?
No. I mean, once the tax equity are in place, then the LP that we're using or the structure that we're using can be of course, we have to inform the tax equity folks who would be coming in, but there's not real limitation on our ability to sell a stake in our own structure.
Okay, and when do you think timing-wise on any additional tax equity financing for Phoebe?
Oh, those are scheduled to be every blocks that we put in place. Now then we have a tax equity. So it's cumbersome, I must say. That, you know, it's a lot of paperwork, a lot of so some of our guys are almost full time in those tax equity tranches of investment. But all should be done by the middle of October. All of the tax equity should have been drawn by mid-October.
Okay, good to hear. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Nelson Ng from RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great, thanks. Just a quick question on the solar panel deposit. So you provide an LC, but in terms of cash out the door, will it eventually be $50 million later this year? Is that how we should think about this?
Yes.
Yes, but we're working with a U.S. bank to have a loan on the a non-recourse loan to Energex, but on the level of Altera, that would be supporting 100% of that disbursement by the end of December. And like I said, it's a non-recourse against Energex holding. Pricing are very competitive, and so that's probably what we are going to do, utilize this new line at the level of Altera to basically pay down all that $50 million U.S.
Okay, and that might be in December, I guess, right, given that you probably want to deploy it as late as possible. Okay, and then it's safe to say that you don't have any PTC-qualified wind turbines, right? So I was just wondering, going forward in the U.S., obviously you're pursuing solar, and you mentioned wind as well. So if you get any, I guess, near-term wind projects, would they be kind of post-PTC runoff type of periods for the completion dates? Or how should we think about what the strategy is if you get awarded a wind RFP in the U.S.?
That's a good point. We have a project in Texas, Griffin Trail, which is south of Fort City that is very well advanced. We have all the land. And the only missing piece is the final FAA permit. So that would be a 2021 project, and we would need some PTC pre-qualified wind turbine. There is some out there. Vestas has some. Some developer also have. So perhaps it's a joint venture we could do, or buy existing PTC wind turbine that needs a home, or sell Griffin Trail as a project ready, NTP project for a promoter that would have those type of turbine. So in any case, we think we're creating also some value in Griffin Trail. Griffin Trail is will be anywhere between 170 to 200 megawatt.
Okay, and you're saying the main hurdle now is to get the FAA permit.
Yes. You remember the Fort City, I would say, agenda with the FAA. So we're quite. Well, we have a little bit more, I would say, experience with FAA now and with the base. So we have designed or redesigned Griffin Trail to minimize any friction with the future base. But, of course, it's always a little bit of an unknown. But given the information that we have from the two existing bases that are active in that area, we think that the redesign of Griffin Trail would allow for FAA permits.
Okay, and this is a greenfield project from the Altera development pipeline?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Got it. And then just switching gears a bit, I might have missed it earlier, but in the commentary in the MD&A, you mentioned a higher OPEX in the BC hydro facilities. Could you just clarify what some of the factors were?
Was that the, one of the driver was Upper Lillooet? We remember that we had made some changes in Upper Lillooet in the last year with the sedimentation. One remaining strategy to increase the production and lower the operating costs was to change some of the component of the turbines. And we have now made some modification during the winter time when the water was lower. So I think we spent $1.6 million more than budgeted in Upper Lillooet. So that's the typical, and some work has been done. We had a rough last year. We had a few event of heavy rain, and we had a few repairs also in BC to be done during the winter period. So it should come back to a little bit more normalized spending in the near future. But last year, Ashlew also had some capex because of the previous event that happened last year. So I think we should be coming back to a little bit more normalized, but it just happened that last winter and last quarter were a little bit more heavy on maintenance in BC.
Okay, perfect. And then just one last question. I can also take it offline if you want, but I noticed that there was like a $8.2 million line item regarding, like in terms of calculating the payout ratio. There's this recovery of maintenance capex and prospective project expenses.
Yeah,
that's like $8.2 million. Can you just clarify what this reflects? And is your payout ratio now excluding development costs?
No. No, this is the recovering of the portion, the cash portion that we were considering that in HSRCA was dedicated to this particular activities, and since we sold it, it was just good. I would say good business sense to recognize that during that 16-month period, we had invested in those capex and also in prospective project in Iceland, and we didn't get any dividend other than the Blue Lagoon dividend. So it was a way to show some of the profit that we've made from the sale in terms of recovery, the portion of the recovery of prospective and capital maintenance capex that had been done in HSRCA.
Okay, great. That's clear. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Jeremy Rosenfeld from Industrial Alliance. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning. Just a couple of cleanup questions. On Ford City and on Phoebe specifically, can you just sort of remind us in terms of any revenue that's being generated prior to officially declaring sort of commercial operations, so that's all market revenue, or is it some of the hedge actually active today already?
In terms of Phoebe, the hedge started in with Shell started in the 1st of July, but the net of the activities are going into
construction
as it's a little bit neutral because for the first month of July we were not producing that much, so it'll be basically neutral. Well, we'll see at the end of September, but it'll go against the construction costs.
Yeah, and it was a minimal, Jeremy, during the second quarter. I mean, less than $500,000 revenue were put against the construction costs.
Yeah, but it's going to increase in July and August.
Yeah, July and August, obviously, with the power. So
Just thinking in terms of where the price is in the market and if you're producing electricity today, for example, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. And in Fort City, we have not started the producing electricity. We, as of this week, the substation has been energized and ERCOT is finalizing all their security studies. We should be starting producing electricity probably next week in Ford City as well.
Okay. And for Ford City, is the expectation to have the commercial operations for all of the turbines by the end of the year?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It should be even, I don't want to be too optimistic, but it should be by the end of September, early October.
Okay. Just coming back to the discussion of the solar opportunities in the U.S., do you have a sense as to what the time frame for some of the construction or some of the, what you might be targeting, let's say, in terms of how quickly you would bring some of that capacity online if you could in a best case scenario, and sort of a range of construction and commercial operations timelines?
Yeah, we think that the first solar that we would be able to put forward would be in 2021, and that would probably be between anywhere between 200 and 300 megawatt, and then the remaining in 2022.
Okay, perfect. And just notionally, so if you contemplate selling down a minority stake in some of the assets that you would be developing, and you were mentioning solar as maybe more interesting, what do you think you might be able to earn in terms of a pickup on, let's say, on an IRR basis, for example, in terms of equity returns? Are you thinking like a 200 basis points equity pickup or something like that? I'm just curious. It's rough numbers.
We're hoping at least that, especially from our own project, at least that.
Okay. Great. That's it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Your next question comes from Ben Pham from BMO. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Maybe just a couple follow-up questions. That Nelson Ng's question on the $8 million, I understand what's going on there. I'm just curious, when you guys set the 10% growth guidance, did you contemplate that having that in there?
The recovery?
Yes.
Nelson, that was not at the time. No, Nelson, it's a view of, we could have included, some peers are including gain on transaction, which we're not doing here. So I think it's a fairly conservative view of recuperating what was expense as prospective and CapEx, which is was a decision from the board to continue to maintain the value and increase the value of HSO. So that's the view, the conservative view we took. So we didn't include any gain either. So, and it was not included and factored in our guidance at the beginning of the year, no.
Okay, all right, thanks for clarifying that. And then when you think about the first half, then, I mean, production's generally in line, a bunch of moving parts, but it just shows diversification again. But I guess, like, when you talk about EBITDA, you mentioned DC. Are you kind of tracking in line with what you were thinking in your budget first half on EBITDA?
On the first half, you're saying, we're a little bit behind, probably somewhere between 7 and 10.
Yeah, specifically in BC.
And of course, France.
France.
Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like if second half's in line, you basically end the year a little bit soft. But then when you book the $8 million, I mean, it looks like you could be on track to hitting your guidance regardless.
We're hoping, but it's always difficult to call on intra year because weather can change, pattern can change, especially in BC. It's been a while. We haven't had a very wet fall, so a big quarter in BC can make a big difference also at the year end. So it's a little bit difficult, and that's why I don't like to comment too much on the intra-year guidance, especially when it's weather-related.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then a lot of questions on Fayord and just with in-service. And I'm just trying to make sure I'm following this a bit better because there's been a bunch of capacity changes the last 3 to 6 months. And so you're coming out with at least an EBITDA guidance in the table. You've always footnoted it in the footnotes. So in 14.1 U.S. EBITDA, how should we think about the commodity component of that? Is it kind of like 80% of that spot revenues and the balance of the contract?
For Fort City?
Yep. Yes.
Fort City is 300 megawatt out of 350, which is sold to as a PPA. So I would say it's at least 75% fixed and perhaps 25% exposure to the spot market for Fort City. That being said, we might have the opportunity to sell 20 megawatt or 25 megawatt into a PPA as well. It's just that since we didn't have the full capacity, we were not too aggressive on the on signing PPA, and given the market condition on the spot market and the going rate on PPA, you know that the going rate on PPA in Texas is below $20 per megawatt hour, and the spot market is much higher than that. So it's kind of difficult when you don't necessarily need to sign a PPA. Remember that those PPA or hedges are, I would say, an obligation made on the project by the tax equity. They want to have at least 10 years of fixed PPA, and hence, given the amount of development in Texas, big customer take advantage of that situation. And actually, I think that they are getting a very good deal on the electricity, and they're happy to sign actually PPA at $18, $19, $17 for 10 years. So having a little bit of exposure on the spot is not necessarily bad if you have a good coverage of all your costs and your margin are protected with the existing PPA. So we'll see if we have a good offer, we might decide to sell a little bit more PPA for Fort City, but I personally, as I see it right now, it's I think it's a good mix.
Yeah, I don't want to intend that it's a negative thing, because it's commodity exposure is pretty small when you look at you guys overall. But I guess I just want to clarify the 14 million EBITDA guidance. Are you saying 25% of that is of EBITDA as spot revenues?
Well, around 20.
Around 20.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I guess like when, sorry to get nitpicky here, but like when you guys, when you look at your guidance last quarter, it looks like you only really moved the EBITDA just a little bit, but then your CapEx went up probably 15 million. Your EBITDA is up 1 million. So that, it looks like you guys are just probably being a bit conservative on the spot power price.
Yes, I guess that when we change the forecast, we might have gone a little bit conservative.
Yeah,
when we
I think that you should then look at it as a Q4 reporting. So really, we are back to original forecast. So original forecast was 14.5 million EBITDA. Now we're down 14.1 million, having one turbine less than original. So I agree with you, Michel. Probably in the Q1 reporting, we're
because
too
the
much
guys,
conservative.
Yeah, the guys were concerned about our ability to put the turbine in the FAA, and perhaps land management also didn't necessarily have all the land option available to deploy the turbine. So they took some very conservative approach if we would have had to squeeze them together.
Yeah.
And less production, perhaps a little bit more maintenance, because the project would have had too tight of the layout might have that too tight and may have increased the maintenance capex on the machine. So I guess the team were concerned at that time to because we didn't have all the land and FAA was still out there, not necessarily they didn't feel very strongly on how the layout would end up. But now everything has been cleared, and they're very confident now with the long-term forecast of the production of the farm.
Okay, that's great. Just just a couple of different changes there. Just wanted to follow that, and then my last question on the just on the SOAR ITC kind of makes a lot of sense for you guys. I'm just kind of looking at just your development backlog on the SOAR side, and it I think it's like 500 megawatts or so. So are you basically thinking that your development pipeline is going to grow the 7.7 gigawatts, or is there some maybe opportunity to look at acquisitions or something to, you know, guys that may need this benefit?
I think that I'm trying to be very clear on what we're trying to do. And in the States, that 750 megawatt of solar is, in my mind, fairly real. If we look at the, I'm not so sure I understood your question. If we look at our 7,000 megawatt of prospective project in general, that number is always changing because it depends where we're focusing. Sometimes you can have a lot of megawatt in secured land, but the market might be slow because of, as an example, Quebec is not active to have new RFP, and we have a bunch of good land option and wind measurement in Quebec. But until Quebec comes back to be active, these megawatt are a little bit on the back burner. So we're always revamping these number and refocusing depending on the activities in the different market. But like I said, I would say the very short and real focused right now is the 750 megawatt in solar. This program of having the secure the panel is something that our folks are working on the ground and advancing very fast.
Okay, that's right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the one. As a reminder, if you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from Hassan Khan from Energex. Please go ahead.
Actually, I'm from National. I'm calling on behalf of Rupert. My question is a broader question. What benefits do you guys see from lower bond yields? Any opportunities for refinancing or accessing a lower cost of capital? Maybe potentially sell downs, maybe?
That's a very, very good point. We have Stardale that has some room. We think we can refinance a piece of Stardale. SM1, together with Desjardins, has an option to refinance a big portion. That's a good point. And Inavik, we haven't hedged the long-term bond. And initially, when we were finalizing the pricing with Hydro-Québec, at the time, the 30-year bond were at 218. That was the base where we kind of frozen the negotiation with Hydro-Québec, and now it's probably 145, 150. So there's good opportunity in our portfolio to relook. That's why we're also looking at Duqueco refinancing in Chile. And Frontera looks a little bit better because obviously long-term rate is going down. So no, that's a good point. It's crazy low these days, and one has to ask yourself: will we see negative bond yield as we've seen in Europe? I never thought I would have seen that in my life, but 30 years bond being at 150, 140 is really low.
Just one more question from my end. We just wanted to ask about the EAB decision. Is the water rental reduced going forward as well, or is it just a one-off adjustment for 2011 and 2012?
Only 2011 and 2012. That represent $3.2 million. We haven't booked it because the agency has still have an appeal time, so we're waiting to see if they will still appeal. It would be a stretch because I think that going back in 2011 and 12 behind the 5 or 7 years delay was a stretch, but we haven't booked it yet.
No.
All right. Thank you. That's all from my end.
Thank you.
Ms. Vachon, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, and thank you, everyone, for your participation. We look forward to speaking to you in November.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect your lines.